And it's here to help you grow. Uh-huh. It's the Faith Connection Show. Uh-huh. And it's here to help you grow. Uh-huh. Here we go, here we go, here we go. Uh-huh. Here we go, here we go, here we go. Uh-huh. It's the Faith Connection Show. Uh-huh. It's the Faith Connection Show. Uh-huh. It's giving you motivation. Uh-huh. Inspiration, revelation. It's the Faith Connection. Here we go, here we go, here we go.
Here we go, here we go, here we go. Here's an inspirational word from Dr. David Miller before the show begins.
The first step to success is taken when you refuse to be a captive of the environment you find yourself in.
It's the Faith Connection.
Good morning. We have with us in the studio this morning Reverend Melvin Tate. And Reverend Tate is the pastor of Mount Calvary Amy Zion Church in Monroe, North Carolina. And Reverend Tate and I have quite a history together. We go back many, many years. And I would hate to say how many years because that would date us. But we're glad to have you in the studio with us today, Reverend Tate.
Good to be here.
We also have our very own Gloria Ross, who is our newscaster on the Faith Connection Show. And Gloria is pastor of Southside Church of God in Kannapolis. And we have a great discussion for you today. We're going to connect you with some of the issues that we're having in the community about churches meeting the needs of the community. Now, we're going to begin the discussion because I think this is a great area because, you know, we connect people every week with people who are doing fantastic things in the community. And we want to talk about it a little bit and see if maybe the church has distanced itself a little bit from community actions and more interaction within the church itself. Well, the church is considered a countercultural society, and of course, countercultural society means that the church within itself is a subculture, and the greater culture around it seems to be changing, or it is different, or holds different opinions and ideas of those cultures. But countercultural societies generally look to change the things that are around it. So let's begin today with a discussion about what we think a church should represent itself to be in the community. Now, also, we want to look at the fact that countercultural society means that the church should not be an ivory tower. It should be a way of reaching out and touching the needs of the community. So let's begin with you, Reverend Tate. Tell us a little bit about where you think the church actually stands today in relationship to the communities in which they are planted in.
Well, that's a good question that requires a lot of thought. In the United States, North America, churches are in decline, all churches, mainline churches. We have new churches that are coming about, mega churches, but in actuality, the average size of a congregation is right around 50 people. So with all the huge churches we have, we're only ministering to about 50 people on any given Sunday. That being said, the church is still the most segregated place on Sunday mornings. We have not changed that concept yet. We like to say that we are multicultural, that we are diverse, but when we go to church, we find that the people look basically like us.
Well, you know, it's interesting you brought that up because most of our communities now are so diverse culturally until we don't have communities anymore that we can just claim just one culture. Do you feel that maybe somehow or another the church is ministering more to the inner walls of the church than they are to the exterior population of the church?
Yes and no. Many times the people in the church, if ministers are answering questions that members aren't asking, it's still not reaching the people, not responding to their immediate needs. I think that what has happened is ministers are not the most important people, are the VIPs in the community. And back when I started in ministry over 50 years ago, ministers were looked up to. But there have been so many scandals in the church scandals with molestation of children, scandals, abuse, sexual harassment. If you look today, ministers are losing pulpits behind moral conduct, immoral conduct. So the question becomes, who's watching the church? Who's ministering to the ministers? And oftentimes that means that ministries take on the personalities of the minister. And what we see today is that a lot of focus is on taking care of the minister rather than the needs of the total community. You know, so it's a status symbol, but it's not the car you drive. It's not the gated community that you live in. It's about responding to the cries of people. And oftentimes the cries of people in the pews go unheard.
Well, you know, it's interesting you say that, because I often say myself that God called the church and placed the leadership of the church here not to be served, but to serve. The scripture clearly indicates that he among you who desires to be great, let him first become your servant. And I do agree with the statement you just made, but I want to back up a moment and ask Reverend Ross to chime in here, because she has proven a point, and I am just excited about her ministry. You said the average number of people in a church on a Sunday morning would be around 50. And many times when we're talking 50 people, we don't feel we can make an impact. But Gloria has a membership between 35 and 50, and they serve 1,400 families a month in her outreach ministry, which I think is exceptional. Gloria, tell us a little bit about what your thoughts are about what Reverend Tate and I have been discussing here.
Yes, we do service an average of, say, 1,100 to 14. We've maxed out at 1,600. That is in our food pantry alone, not counting the other multiple ministries we have. But my intention at the church as pastor is not to be setting myself up on a pedestal, but becoming a servant. Jesus himself washed the saints' feet. He bowed himself low enough to be able to humble himself and wash the feet of the disciples. And we must give something outside of ourselves, and not just as a pastor and pastors in general being heady and high-minded, but we must reach out in the community and serve. It's our calling to serve the people. And in doing so, that causes churches to grow. When we reach out of the box, outside of the four walls, and reach that person that has $0, reach that person that has nothing to give, and give them of ourselves. And in giving of ourselves, we're giving and acting out what Jesus called the love of God.
Okay, guys, we're going to take a quick break.
It's the Faith Connection.
Successful. I'm gonna have a good day. It's the Faith Connection.
It's now time for Faith World News.
The Street Theater is attacked in Governor Cuomo in Tatoor, New York State. In Buffalo, New York, in response to New York State's aggressive promotion of late-term abortion, a group of pro-life street actors will tour 18 cities in New York State from February 10th through the 17th. They will start in Buffalo, New York, and end at St. Patrick's Cathedral in New York City. On a happier note, is God the matchmaker? Christian dating takes a whole new turn. In Fort Lauderdale, Florida, starting on St. Valentine's Day, single Christians over 21 years old have a new way to meet, make friends, and maybe even get married. God the Matchmaker is a program of Florida Theological Ministries. It offers speed dating plus spiritual discernment and direction in the art of courtship, rather than just providing a way to hook up. The process is designed to help those who believe remember to put God first in all things, including non-sexual companionship or marriage. Historians and social scientists believe that the process of courtship is over 4,000 years old, with modern adjustments such as dating coming along in the early 1900s. Unlike dating, which encourages participants to try out multiple partners until finding the one that is just right, courtship focuses on getting to know and love one person, warts and all. The crew at God the Matchmaker believes that trying on several in order to find the perfect one is a method that should be reserved for buying shoes. The process will leave behind elements of courtship that weren't great back in the day, such as families giving away or selling brides as trophies or payments for conquest. Instead, God the Matchmaker encourages a transparent and mutually respectful process, resulting in people being able to marry according to the informed choice, which is more in line with Moses' statements in the book of Numbers, chapter 36, verse 6. To find out more, visit GodTheMatchmaker.org. This is Gloria Ross in World Faith News on the Faith Connection Show. Remember today, you can give without loving, but you cannot possibly love without giving. So love today until it takes your breath away. God bless you.
This has been Faith Connection News with Gloria Ross. Now, back to the show.
It's the Faith Connection.
Okay, we're back. I was reading in an article, and the article said, to reach the lost and the broken with the gospel, each church needs to be aware and reflective of its community, assets, and needs. And further in the article explains that there is no way that you can actually do that without, first of all, number one, you have to take a walk in your community, and you have to talk to people in your community. It seems as though that the church of this age has involved itself in more dialogue with itself and not as much with its people to consider where the needs are in the community. Do you agree or disagree with that, or do you think, can you embellish on that, either of you?
Yeah, I agree 100% with that. And Jesus, if we are likened unto Jesus, Jesus took that community walk. And the word said in the Gospels that Jesus, as he grew, found favor with God and man. He grew not only spiritually, but he grew socially. And we've got to reach, while we have the Spirit of God within us, we've got to take that Spirit of God and reach out into the social community and to those in need, which means walking the walk and walking through the communities to define those needs and to recognize them and then take action upon them.
I think also it's about tearing down barriers. It's interesting that the president is interested in building a wall to separate people. But even since biblical times, walls have come down. The Jericho walls came down, the Great Wall of China, the wall separating East and West Berlin. Walls have to come down. And in the midst of bringing down walls, we get to communicate with one another. And I think the prophet Ezekiel in the 8th century was talking about, until you sit where people sit and eat what they eat, you will not know or understand what they're really about and what their issues are. So you have to identify, not just identify with it, but experience it. Back in the days when there was a tent city in Washington, D.C., the Poor People's March was started because people had gone into D.C. and were living in tents. They were homeless. And many of the elected officials went out and dealt, stayed all night, with them to learn what they were dealing with. And they found out a lot of those people were degreed people who had fallen on hard times. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think, you know, we're about, it said that we're stewardship is about time, talent, and treasure. I find that the church wastes too much time managing itself, maintaining itself. And therefore, if you do that, you don't generate the kind of revenue or resources that you need to meet the need. Jesus said, the poor you're going to have with you always. I think what he was saying to us is never think you're going to have enough resources, but you have to come up with the creativity to do more, even though you got less. So the whole factor of doing ministry in communities centers around how much you want to engage yourself in the hurt where people are hurting, how much you want to engage yourself in challenging the status quo. Because even now, this shutdown, recent government shutdown, the church wasn't saying much. It was almost as if it suffered from iniquitous laryngitis. Still not saying much. The children that and the people in the caravan of Mexico trying to seek asylum, get away from violence. And you make those people sound like they're monsters. America can do better, because the last time I was looked in New York City, the Statue of Liberty still stood there. And the statue said it was welcoming people that had certain problems and issues and that promised them the pursuit of happiness. So I think that not only has the nation failed people, but the church is failing people, because now the church is trying to figure out its place in society. And with all the scandals in churches, I mean, power and competition, the mega pastors, it takes a lot of money to broadcast. Social media. You know, when we were in school at Howard, I got kicked out of class for saying that I wasn't comfortable with social media or mass communication, because you had to assume that the people controlling it were good people, Christian people.
Right.
We have seen the evil and the wickedness and the corruption that can come out of good intent. We've got to learn how to get back to taking an interest in people. And where people are hurting, you just can't throw a few dollars at.
Since you mentioned the hurting, let me breach something here with both of you. You know, we believe or have a conception that the person can be reached by the gospel without first addressing the social issues. And I think that becomes a real problem, because, number one, it's difficult to explain to someone who is hungry and hadn't had a morsel of bread in 2 or 3 days how Jesus is the bread of life. I think that Christ is more than just words, and he's more than what we make him out to be. I think the social part of the deficiencies that are in our communities where people are suffering, and you mentioned tent cities. We have tent cities in some of the local areas here. And you know, it's almost like having nests of poverty in the midst of affluency. And I think we have to look at the holistic approach to ministering the gospel. Jesus said, when I was hungry, you fed me. When I was naked, you clothed me, you know, and when I was in prison, you visited me. So basically, he's laying out the template for the gospel. And it is not just about preaching. It's about meeting the needs of people. And Christ preached, but in his preaching, he was always meeting the needs. He was healing, feeding, all of the necessities, because those things are important to get the attention of the believer or to make them believers.
Well, it's obvious Jesus was socially woke because even in the prayer that he taught his disciples to pray, he said, give us this day our daily bread, before he started dealing with forgiveness of sins, our trespasses. So one of the things that Jesus was conscious, and he was sensitive. There's a word, Hebrew, Hesed. Jesus showed love and kindness and tender mercy. And you got to realize that as the prophets prophesied against the powers that be. Jesus, in essence, had his hurdles and his real conflict with the church, with the powers that be, because he was serving people. Some of the people Jesus was serving was outside the church. They would call them Gentiles. But basically, his ministry was to folk who couldn't get past the curtain.
But now, as we talk about that, Gloria, I'm going to mention this and would like for you to comment on it as well. You know, there is no profit in the people that are downtrodden, and that, and nowadays we're looking more for tithes and offerings, and these people do not provide that. They may be considered liabilities rather than assets. Now, I'm not saying that's the trend of it. You know, last year everybody talks about how many businesses closed and how many jobs were lost, and but last year the Southern Baptist researchers wrote a statement that between 4,000 and 7,000 churches closed their doors last year. And if that's the case, churches are closing faster than businesses. And could it be because they may not have understood the purpose of their original opening? And therefore, since they missed their mission, their mark, the church ended up folding because it just didn't have the right concept in mind when it formed itself. What do you think about that?
I think you're exactly right. The right concept has to be there, and the priority has to be there. And Jesus said, "Thy kingdom come, thy will be done," in his prayer. But I think traditionally across the board with most churches, it's now my kingdom come, my will be done, okay, which is the very wrong priority. And the Word of God speaks to us about pure religion and undefiled before God is this pure religion and undefiled is to feed the fathers, visit the orphans, minister to the widows and those that are in need and have afflictions. And actually, we will see Jesus leaving his disciples and going into Samaria, which at that time was also considered an unclean people, to minister to that one woman at the well. And Dr. Miller, you mentioned that Jesus feeding and so forth and clothing, but he said, "Inasmuch as you've done it unto one of the least of these, my brethren, you've done it unto him." So when we're ministering to the social aspects, we're indeed at that point ministering unto the Lord. And it doesn't matter what they look like. Doesn't matter if they have tattoos all over their entire body and you can't even tell what their face looks like. It doesn't matter what color their skin is. It doesn't matter if their eyes are slanted or if they're not, or if they're crippled or lame or blind or halted. We minister unto them, even as you preached the other day, I heard you, to the blind, the maimed, and the halted. And when we're ministering unto those, we are indeed doing our servant's work and ministering unto the Lord Jesus himself.
And I think the other, there's a parable that Jesus tells about the Good Samaritan. And if there's any parable that states so much how the church responds to opportunities to serve, if you remember, the priest and the Levite came upon the man that had been beaten and robbed and left to die. And both of them chose to make church matters more important than the man matter in the ditch. And so they passed by. So the very person that comes along, the Samaritan, who was not a part of, wasn't allowed, was considered unclean, is the one who stops, ministers to the man, then makes sure he gets care by taking him to whatever was the hospital or the that day or the urgent care or whatever it was, Atrium or Novant that day, and said, whatever the cost is, if this isn't enough to cover, when I come back through here, I'll pay the bill. Now, that takes a lot of risk, and it takes a lot of responsibility for others.
Now, let me hit something there. You know, what you just said is key for us to be effective ministries in the community. Never count the cost, you know. And you mentioned that was one of the things that he left in his instruction. Whatever it is, if it's more than this, when I come back, I'll take care of it. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
It's the Faith Connection.
I rose this morning in my right mind. Brand new mercy came right on time. Claiming right now victory is mine. Hand me a stick so I can draw the line. I can't let it bring me down. I can't let you turn me around, 'cause I've got God on my side and I
Well, I've got God on my side, and I I've been giving, I've been serving, I've been praising, I've got God on my side, and I, well, I've come too far for a stop sign, holding on, cause Jesus is mine, holding on, cause Jesus is mine, waiting on God to blow my mind, 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 I can't let it bring me down. You turn me around, cause I've got God on my side, and I, well, I've got God on my side, and I, no, I can't, no, I can't, well, I've got God on my side, and I, I've been praying, I've been giving, I've been serving, I've been praising, I've been praying, I've been giving, I've been serving, I've been praising, I've been praying, I've been giving, I've been serving, I've been praising, I've got God on my side, and I, everybody clap your hands.
Today, but we're going to do this in a part two because this discussion is an interesting discussion. So we're going to have Reverend Tate and Reverend Ross back with us in a part two, and we're going to continue our conversation about the impact of the church in our community today.
It's the Faith Connection Show, and it's here to help you grow. It's the Faith Connection Show. It's the Faith Connection Show. It's giving you motivation, inspiration, revelation. It's giving you motivation, inspiration, revelation. It's the Faith Connection. Here we go, here we go, here we go. It's here to help you grow. It's the Faith Connection Show, and it's here to help you grow. Here we go, here we go, here we go. Here we go, here we go, here we go. It's the Faith Connection Show. It's the Faith Connection Show. It's giving you motivation, inspiration, revelation. It's giving you motivation, inspiration, revelation. It's the Faith Connection. Here we go, here we go, here we go. Here we go, here we go, here we go. It's giving you motivation, inspiration, revelation.
That's right. It's giving you motivation.
That's right.
Inspiration.
That's right.
Revelation.
That's right.
It's the Faith Connection.
I want to tell you today not to limit yourself. The Temptations had a great song out years ago that says it's only your imagination. Well, they were right. Your limitations are only your imagination. Running away with you. We have on the show today with us Gary Van Dyke. Gary is the founder of International Charity that feeds thousands of orphans. And Gary, it's just great having you on the show. I've read a lot about what you're doing, and you're doing a phenomenal work all over the world. And I think you've been at this for quite a while.
Well, thank you, Dr. Miller, and I do appreciate the invitation to your show and the fact that you are wanting to talk about Food for Orphans. Yes, sir, and I started Food for Orphans back in 2007, and we've been quite busy since then. We've fed orphans in 16 different countries since then, and we've provided over 8 million meals to orphans around the world.
My gosh, 8 million?
Yes, sir. It's been fantastic. And we're not stopping. We're going to be over 8.5 million this year and probably 9 million next year.
8.5 and then 9 million. God, Gary, I can't wait to get to Colorado so that you and I can meet face to face. You know, the one thing that I really want our listeners to take note to, you have 25 years experience in radio and television prior to becoming the CEO of Food for Orphans. Is that correct?
Yes, sir. I had one of those dream jobs. You know, I was a radio DJ for many, many years and a news anchor, and I had a studio where I made television commercials and did the voiceovers and things like that, and did that for about 25 years until God said, I want you to do something different. And that's what he told me about Food for Orphans.
Well, you know, he's the voice we must listen to.
I certainly choose to listen to him, that's for sure.
Absolutely. Well, 16 countries later and 8 million meals served. That's quite an accomplishment. Now, what I'd like to mention, you know, a lot of times people just don't understand that doing great work for God does not depend on us. It depends on God and what God is doing in our lives. You are a two-time cancer survivor.
Yes, sir. That is true. And the reality of that is I did not even develop cancer until after I started Food for Orphans about a year later. My wife had just gone through breast cancer surgery, radiation, chemotherapy the year I started Food for Orphans, and then I was diagnosed with cancer and had to go through surgery and recovery. And about 4 months later, another doctor came to me and said, "Well, you've got a deadly form of melanoma, which is a skin cancer."
Right.
And so I had to go through surgery there again, and they took a big hunk of my left upper arm and took it all the way down to the bone. But the good news is I'm one of those fortunate ones that I am cancer-free. My wife is cancer-free. And yes, we had to go through it. Yes, we had to recover. Yes, that was a big mountain for us to climb. But God is faithful, and I'm not going to over-spiritualize it. But I'm telling you, if it wasn't for God, I wouldn't be here today.
Well, you know, I think you have much to give praise for. Now, I want to talk to you just a second. You were 55 years old when you started this program?
Yeah, you know, most people will do this kind of stuff when they're younger, when they've got the energy.
Yeah, well,
and
that's true.
I was 55 when I believe that God told me that he wanted me to start Food for Orphans. And I began to do the work on it, and we incorporated, and we got approved by the IRS to be a 501c3. That means all donations are tax deductible.
Right.
And we have a website up. We've got people talking about us, and it just took off. And apparently, you know, I wasn't the only one that had a heart for orphans, because I believe that the thousands of people that we have in our database that have contacted us over the years also have a heart for orphans. And of course, the Bible tells us specifically, God tells us that we are to care for orphans, and it's not a request. It's not something that we should emulate because somebody else did it. It's a direct order from God to to take care of orphans and to be kind to them and to be good to them. And so I was out working with another nonprofit and visiting different children's ministry sites around the world. And it was always the orphans, the visit with the orphans, Dr. Miller, that I really, my heart was touched. My heart was touched when I saw them and I realized that in the middle of the night when they woke up with a nightmare, they had no one to go to. And they had no one to help them to get over this scary nightmare. And I met so many of them that their stories were that, there was one that I met that his mother had decided that she could not take care of him when he was born. She put him in a plastic bag and took him out and left him in the jungle for the dogs to eat.
My goodness.
And he still had the placenta attached to him, and that's how newborn he was. But a hunter came through there and found him and took him to the police station, and the police took him to the hospital, and after a couple of months of recovery, they took him to one of the orphanages that we support, and now he's 3 years old and doing quite well. But that's the kind of kids that God was telling me to take care of, the ones who can't take care of themselves, the ones that really need our help. And for the last 12 years, that's what Food for Orphans has been doing, taking care of those children who need the help.
You know, Gary, that's exceptional. And I noticed that in some of your literature, I read that you spoke about the magic of 37 cents. Tell our listeners a little bit about 37 cents is change that we throw in the dresser and forget is there. Tell us how much you're able to do with 37 cents.
Hey, don't we though? We throw it. We do that. We take it out of our pocket, throw it into a dish on the dresser, and don't even realize that we just left on top of the dresser enough money to buy an orphan a meal for that day. And 37 cents will buy a meal. As a matter of fact, if we have people that are making a commitment to feed orphans every single day, so they go on our website and they sign up for a reoccurring donation every month of $33 will feed three orphans every single day. $44 will feed four orphans every single day. $55 will feed five orphans every single day. So the 37 cents doesn't sound like a whole lot, but Dr. Miller, it's what is saving the life of orphans around the world, because that will provide a meal for that day to an orphan, and that means that they're going to survive. That means that they've got a chance. That means that they're not going to die of starvation. And Dr. Miller, one of the scary things is the true statistic that every 90 seconds, another orphan starves to death.
90 seconds?
Every 90 seconds. That doesn't mean they get hit by a car. That doesn't mean they got sick with something, cancer or heart disease. It means that they were slowly and painfully dying because they had no food and they were starving to death. And that's the reason why I started Food for Orphans, because I realized that, you know, I had a refrigerator full of food. I had a pantry full of food. I had a credit card in my pocket, and I had 14 McDonald's down the street from me. And I had plenty of food. I had grocery stores everywhere. I had plenty of food. I wasn't worried about food. And yet these orphans will go for days and days and days and not have a single meal because there is absolutely no one to care for them. And that's why Food for Orphans is standing up for these kids and saying, we're going to find you, we're going to feed you, and we're going to take care of you until you're able to take care of yourself.
That's exceptional, Gary.
One, two. I was too afraid to believe it, or not good enough to receive it. Seasons go, so why do I need it? This was the story of my life. I told so much that I wasn't worthy. I even tried love, but then love hurt me. I shouted, but the God never heard me. I became the victim of my life.
See, the truth is,
see, everybody goes through the fire, but not
they will know.
I will live and not die. I will win with tears in my eyes. I'll be judged and criticized.
and let your problems override the promise. And don't let your feelings dictate your faith.
I was too afraid to believe it, or not good enough to receive it.
You know, evidently you work with a lot of orphanages in these 16 countries, and you feed money into them in order for them to provide food for these kids. Is that correct?
Yes, sir. We sure do. We do have orphanages and orphan projects around the world where we do send them money so that they could buy their food locally in their village. Mm-hmm. That means they get the food that they need when they need it. They get fresh food, and they get the kind of food that they'll eat. It's not going to be something that we eat in America, but they don't eat. It's going to be something that they purchased, that they cooked, that's fresh, that's healthy.
All right. Now, there was another question that I thought that our listeners would love to hear a little bit about, and I'm going to come back to how to start a nonprofit like this, because I think it's exceptional that you did this at age 55. Most people don't have the energy at age 65. But help the listeners to understand, when you're selecting these different orphanages overseas, do you all do any work in the U.S. and some of the impoverished states that where we have this problem, or most of your work is done internationally?
Well, Dr. Miller, I made a decision when God called me to feed orphans. He didn't say feed orphans in one country or another. He just said go feed the neediest that are out there, the ones that need help. Find them and feed them.
Okay.
And so what I decided was I would do exactly that. We did an evaluation of orphanages that we knew of around the world, because I had been visiting some of them. And then we did an evaluation of the orphans that were in the U.S. And let me say right now to your listeners and to you, Dr. Miller, thank you so much for paying your taxes every year, because we have a program in place here in the U.S. called the foster care system. It's a bit of a broken system, but it does provide an opportunity for the host family to purchase food, and they give them the money to buy the food. And if they still have trouble, we've got food stamps, we've got unemployment, we've got soup kitchens, we've got pantries at churches, we've got, and then on top of that, we provide free education for our children here in the U.S. They don't get that overseas. They don't get the foster care program. They don't get the food. They don't get the welfare system. They don't get food stamps. So we've decided that the ones in America, and I'm 68 years old now.
Okay.
In my 68 years, Dr. Miller, I really have not heard of anyone, or at least too many people, starving to death in the U.S. because they couldn't get food. There is food here, and it's available to people if they want it, if they can get to it. Mm-hmm. That's where we need to come in as Christian brothers and sisters, and make sure that our neighbors have got food. But we're talking about kids that are living on the street, doctor. Kids that the welfare system, there is no welfare system. The government doesn't care about orphans. The government doesn't come in and pick up the orphans and take them to an orphanage and make sure that they're taken care of. In many countries, the government just doesn't care about orphans at all.
Well, Gary, the reason I asked you that question, and you answered it just like I wanted you to answer it, because that's the first thing that comes out of people's mouths, is that, well, we got poor people here. Why are we going way over there? But I wanted you to explain it from your angle of passion, because I think it's important to understand we do have systems in place here. But even though we've got the systems in place here, they may not always work like they're supposed to work, but there are places where there is no system of help or sustenance for the people that need it. And so I just wanted you to talk about that a little bit, because I wanted our listeners to hear you dispel the myth of that, and I think you did it very well.
Thank you, sir. All right. Thank you, sir.
Now,
it's a passionate thing of mine, because I'm concerned for orphans no matter where they live.
Right. Well, Gary, now, does your wife work with you in the ministry, or is it primarily you? Or
I have a wife. She's 65, and she not only helps food for orphans, but she also works full-time for another ministry working with children around the world. It's one of our partner organizations that we work together in orphanages and other projects around the world. And she is quite busy and quite lively and energetic, and has more energy than I do.
And both of you are cancer survivors. That is inspirational to people to hear that you guys have done so much to help other people and not thinking about your own personal situations. Well, Gary, we want to mention one other thing to our listeners. Was it very difficult getting the nonprofit started? Because there are a lot of people out here that want to do something like this, but they don't know the first step. And it seems like to me you have mastered that first step.
Well, let me give you just a couple of points. Number one, before I was in radio and television, I was in the construction trade. I was a construction worker.
Mm-hmm.
I've never been to college. Not saying that's the best way to go, by the way. I'm just saying for me, it was not something that happened in my life.
Okay.
I was not able to go. And so when it came time to start Food for Orphans, I had to figure out what to do.
Uh-huh.
I had to figure out what was needed, and I had to think about it and ask about it. And I did a lot of research, and I would research other organizations and what did they do to get started, and I'd copy their paperwork and do searches on how do you start a nonprofit, how do you incorporate, how do you get a 501c3 from the IRS, and I would figure it out myself. I couldn't afford an attorney to do the paperwork, doctor. I had to do it myself. And so I just stuck in there, and after work every night, I'd sit down in my kitchen table, and I would do the research and figure out what to do. And I'm not saying I'm a genius, and I'm not saying that I had any kind of specialty, but I just put my nose to the grindstone and kept going.
I think it was a passion for you. And You know, I think, Gary, you and your wife are an example of it's never too late. I mean,
oh, yes.
at 55 and you guys are going strong right now. And I mean, what you've accomplished, 8 million meals, and you're saying that this year you'll go 8.5 and next year 9 million. You just keep right on rolling along. Now, with the passion that the two of you have, who will take this over? Will it be your kids or whatever? Because this is too great a ministry to let fall by the wayside.
That's another part of the story, Doctor. I am reaching an age, and I have some medical conditions, and I've got some other issues that are keeping me from having the energy that I need to do this. I also have developed in the last 5 years Parkinson's disease.
Mm-hmm.
And the same disease that Muhammad Ali had when he passed away.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm challenged with what does the future look like for us? And I wish I could say to you that my children would be the ones who would take over, but quite frankly, I don't have a perfect family. I don't have children that are following Christ, and I don't have children who have a passion for orphans.
Mm.
And so they won't be taking over for me, and I will continue working until that person comes that is supposed to take over, and I'll know when that is.
All right. Now, before we leave today, can you tell our listening audience how to get in touch with you if they want to contribute to your ministry, and anyone that wants to start a nonprofit? I'm not trying to put you on the spot, but maybe make some contact, and you could talk to them through email or whatever, questions and answer questions to help them, because I think a person who is as committed as you are to this ministry, there needs to be as much visibility as possible in hopes that out of that, maybe God will send the right person with the right passion.
Yeah, thank you, Doctor. Yeah, I appreciate that a great deal. The best way to reach Food for Orphans is to go to our website at Food for Orphans. That's the four is F-O-R, Food for Orphans. .org, foodfororphans.org, and you can email me from there, send a message from there. If you've got a question about what Food for Orphans is doing, if you want to make a donation, you can make a donation right there on our website. You can set up a monthly donation, and remember, for every $11 feeds one orphan. $11 a month will feed one orphan every single day. $33 a month will feed three orphans every day. $66 a month will feed six orphans every day. And we also have a toll-free number that if you'd like to just talk to the operator, and she'll take your information and she'll get it all set up for you. It only takes about 60 seconds to do that. The phone number is toll-free, 888-242-0069. All you do is dial 1-888-242-0069, and the operator will take your information, and you could be the one person that stands up for that orphan and says, I've got your back. I'm not going to let you die. I'm going to provide you with a meal every single day, and that's all it takes, is just somebody to say, you can count on me.
Very good. Well, it's been great having Gary Van Dyke on the show. Gary is, again, the founder of Food for Orphans, and Gary's organization feeds some 8,000 kids, orphans, in 16 foreign countries. Gary, it's been great having you, and we got to talk some more after we get off the air, but really appreciate you and love you and love the work that you're doing.
Thank you, Dr. Miller. I appreciate it very much.
Okay, be blessed. Have a great
one. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is not a drill. It's time for you to speak what you want to see, and if you're with it, then repeat after me. Come on. Turn around, blessings, blessings. Every time I turn around, blessings on blessings. Every time I turn around, blessings, blessings. Yeah, every time I turn around, blessings on blessings. Hey. Yes, sir. I see blessings, blessings.
Every time I turn around,
there will be blessings on blessings. Upon me, in my hands, I have more than enough.
blessings.
Hey,
there will be blessings or blessings. Oh, Lord. I see blessings. Blessings. Yeah. There will be blessings or blessings.
Show, and it's here to help you grow.